Welcome to St. Louis on the Air, and this is an encore presentation. Does the Midwest get short shrift in today's America? Some call it flyover country, implying irrelevance. A famous cover on the New Yorker magazine years ago showed a map of America dividing New York on the east and California in the west, separated only by the Hudson River. It's enough to give the rest of us an inferiority complex. Until now. There is a new book out titled The Midwest, God's Gift to Planet Earth, subtitled An Illustrated Guide to the History and Culture of the Galaxy's Most Important Region. Take that, New York and California. With me to talk about it are two men with deep Midwestern roots. Mike Draper is the author of The Midwest, God's Gift to Planet Earth, and the owner of Raygun, a Des Moines, Iowa-based clothing store which bills itself as the greatest store in the universe. He joins us from snowy Des Moines. Kenyon Grader is a doctoral student in English at Washington University here in St. Louis. He is the series editor of Course on Midwest Culture, a part of the Art of the Rural blog. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
And Mike, thanks. You are experiencing one of the joys of living in the Midwest right now, aren't you? About 12 inches of it.
Yeah, we got 12 inches of snow last night, but I was still able to show up to work on time, which is, a bizarre sense of Midwestern pride.
Well, good for you. And there is plenty of good old-fashioned Midwestern pride, isn't there?
Yeah, there's tons of it. I mean, our book, I think, is a fair and balanced look at the Midwest. And we came to the objective conclusion that it is God's gift to planet Earth.
Well, you seem to be quite a fan of hyperbole, given the way you describe your own enterprise there, Raygun, and the book.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, they still haven't found any life on Mars, so we're not too worried about any competing clothing stores extraterrestrially.
What got you into this whole process, Mike?
I guess it's been pretty long. I was born and raised in Van Meter, Iowa, which is just outside Des Moines, so I went to school K through 12. And my only goal for the first 18 years, or I guess at least ever since I was eight, was to leave Iowa. And I did that. I went to the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia in 2000 to study history. I lived in Europe for a while. And that was when I first really started thinking more and more about the Midwest, once I kind of encountered the just wave of ignorance about my region that exists outside the Midwest. I kind of felt like I was less of traveling from Iowa to Philadelphia as I was like a foreign exchange student from the United States of Midwest. There were tons and tons of questions that I would get. And that's when I really first started thinking about what is the Midwest or what is, you know, my home state and what makes it different.
We're basically considered irrelevant here, aren't we, by people on both ends of the country, if you will, and other places as well.
Yeah, more or less. We say that the kind of mystique of the Midwest stems from, one, people have no idea where it is, and two, nobody really cares what goes on here.
Kenyon, is he on the right track?
Well, you know, that's the perception behind it. I mean, the whole idea of the flyover is that nothing happens here. You need to get over us to get to where things are actually happening. But one of the things that I love so much about Mike's book that they just came out with it is the absolute brashness of it and the chutzpah, which is, I think, actually very un-Midwestern in a lot of ways, but it's so awesome because we have this region where we sometimes have this sort of inferiority complex with these coastal reactions to us, and we kind of perceive ourselves as a flyover region sometime, and a lot of the people here want to get out. And so this attitude of finally staking a plot in where you grew up and having some pride in it and having some brash confidence in it is great, I think.
I wonder if it's the fact that we have an inferiority complex or the rest of the country has a superiority complex.
Oh, yeah. Could be both. Yeah.
You know, I can relate, Mike, to part of your story anyway, because I came here from the East Coast some 40 years ago. And actually, when I was leaving to come, there were people seriously and who literally thought that there were Indian teepees not very far from downtown St. Louis. I mean, that's how they viewed this part of the country.
Yeah, it's really interesting, you know, what you talk about with, Midwestern pride is that the most fascinating thing I found with the book is that, you know, a lot of people said, well, what's the one most interesting thing you've found out? And I'd say the one most interesting thing is both Liberace and Les Paul are from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. But also just that nobody would ever have thought that. But when you look at just the mountain of accomplishments that have come out of the Midwest, I think a lot of it goes unnoticed because we don't make a big deal about it. Like, it's hard to know that Faulkner is not from the South because, you know, people from the South just go on and on about it because that's the one bit of culture they can cling to. Whereas we just kind of give away all of our biggest writers from, you know, Hemingway to Fitzgerald, even a guy like Jonathan Franzen. And a lot of their material is Midwestern material, but they're not thought of as Midwestern writers the same way that you would have a Western writer or a Southern writer. So I think that's kind of part of the issue, is not that we haven't accomplished a lot. We have. It's that we don't really, like, toot our own horn enough.
Well, part of the problem is that the names that you mentioned, they don't stay here. Les Paul and Jonathan Franzen, all the rest of them, go to New York or Los Angeles, where they really pursue their careers.
Yeah, I think a lot of them will leave, but then a lot of them will also stay. A guy like Sinclair Lewis was always kind of Midwestern based, and he was the first American to win the Nobel Prize for Literature, so it pays to stick around. But we've also had some people who have, you know, from the Wright brothers to Henry Ford to Thomas Edison, these were people who stayed in the Midwest and built companies here. Even today, if you think about some of the largest companies in America, they're still based out of the Midwest, from Berkshire Hathaway to Ford to General Motors. And so that's another impressive thing, is how much Midwesterners have done for other regions, and we have still retained enough people to accomplish things ourselves. It's very generous of us.
This is really a pretty big swath of the country that we're talking about. Define the Midwest for us. We don't need to name the 12 states, but just give us a sense of its scope and breadth.
Yeah, that's the trickiest thing, is how you name it. A lot of people leave off, you know, the Dakotas down to Kansas as the Plain States, but we take kind of the 12 states from the Plains over to Ohio. Essentially, the core of the Midwest is the old Northwest Territory, so, you know, Ohio, Michigan, that kind of thing. But the Midwest we define as the area of states that nobody else claims. You know, Ohio may not feel Midwestern, but it'd be hard. You'd be hard-pressed to find anybody in New Jersey who would consider Ohio an eastern state. And, you know, Missouri is, you know, a little more southern, but it's really not the South. You know, it's not Alabama. So you can breathe a sigh of relief there.
Well, I think that's one of the great things about the region as well. I mean, it's kind of viewed as this culturally homogenous area. But at the same time, there's a lot of really interesting diversity that goes unnoticed as well. Of course, you have the this huge agricultural and pastoral tradition, but you also have these manufacturing hubs in the industrial cities, like a lot of the Great Lakes cities and stuff like that. You have, like you said, Missouri's a bit more southern. Northern Minnesota's an awful lot like Canada in some respects. And so there is some diversity here.
But Kenyon, tell me, what do you think are the main things that we have in common?
Yeah, you know, that's the way Mike did his book. You can tell he was a history student, because he has this immense, impressive amount of data. Me studying literature, I'm more interested in how people have imagined the Midwest, whether they're from here or not. And a lot of the things are things that we've heard about a lot: a Midwestern work ethic, a Midwest nice, a Midwest humility. And that can go both positively and negatively. There could be a Midwest naivete as well. When people perceive Midwestern kids coming out to the coast, they might be in over their heads. You see all kinds of tropes like this as well. So I think those are sort of the imaginative commonalities that we share.
Did that square with you, Mike?
Yeah, I think flyover country is the biggest thing that all of us have in common. If you look at, you know, economy, even the way we speak, it's one of the most diverse areas in the country. But everybody suffers from the same fate of being located between Los Angeles and New York. You know, there's no getting around that. And I think if you look at things like literature, when you do grow up in flyover country, you don't have this sense of yourself, of being so important. And it actually makes you a really great observer of the rest of the country. If you look at the Gilded Age, that was named by a Midwesterner, Mark Twain. If you look at the Jazz Age, that was named by a Midwesterner, F. Scott Fitzgerald. Some of America's greatest comedians, you know, observers of people, are all Midwestern, from Bill Murray to Johnny Carson to David Letterman, even back to Langston Hughes and Mark Twain. And so I think that's kind of what ties us together. And it's not really a shared sense of history necessarily, but throughout history, every, you know, Midwesterner has always kind of had this idea of they're getting passed over by somewhere else. everything exciting is happening somewhere else. And that gives you a unique perspective.
You know, the term flyover country, it seems to me, is one that is relatively new. I can't really remember hearing it too much until the last couple of years, and actually as part of the political campaigning recently. Do you have any idea where it came from, either of you?
Yeah, when we looked it up, it came from like the 1970s was when it first invented. We think it's particularly cruel considering the Wright brothers invented the airplane. So without Ohio, we wouldn't even be flown over.
But they flew it in Kitty Hawk, and I guess that's the fly in the ointment there, right?
Yeah, and both both flyover country and the term heartland are pretty recent terms. They came around, like, started in the 70s and then really took off by the 80s and 90s.
Well, and that's one of the most interesting things about the region is the term heartland and the term flyover are really just on opposite ends of the spectrum. There's this sense that nothing important happens here with the term flyover. But then there's also the term that there's sort of this core of moral fiber for the U.S. that happens, and that's that warm, fuzzy, ill-defined image of the heartland as well. So the Midwest is a very contradictory place in a lot of interesting ways.
Kenyon, you grew up in this part of the country, in the Midwest. Was it Iowa? Is that correct?
Yep, northwest corner.
Why have you stayed?
Well, you know, like Mike said, when I was growing up, it seemed like when you ask people what they're going to do after high school, I'm getting out of here. That's what everybody seemed to say. I never really shared that urge to get out. I really liked where I grew up. I think there was a lot of interesting people and places happening up around there. I didn't venture out near as much as Mike did. When I graduated from high school, I decided to go out and see the big wide world, and I went to college 10 minutes away from the family farm. But, you know, I've always loved the area and loved the geography, loved the culture. I don't know. I've just never shared that urge to get out.
And Mike, why did you come back?
That's my wife is from London, England, and she's probably been asking that several times. For me, I never expected really to move back. When I went out east, you do find, you know, it's hard to define what exactly is culture, and you don't really understand it until you go somewhere else. And it wasn't until I was out east that you realize there are just these subtle differences of the way Midwesterners communicate with each other, the way Midwestern humor is versus East Coast humor. And I found myself hanging out with a lot of Midwesterners, even at Penn. And when I started selling shirts, I found that being from the Midwest was my most defining quality. And one time the company started humbly enough as me just selling T-shirts out of a bag on the street. And so I was in Times Square one day selling T-shirts, and I went back and found that my car had been towed. And so I went to the impound to collect it, and I gave her my license plate number, and she wrote it down under New York plates. And I said, oh, the car's from Iowa. They're Iowa plates. And so she wrote down O-H-I-O. And I'm like, oh, God. I said, oh, no, it's Iowa plates. She's like, I know. I got it. You're like, well, how do I broach the subject? And so I just said, oh, no, Iowa is spelled I-O-W-A. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's fine. And I realized that being from the Midwest was like my most defining quality. It's this mysteriousness about us. And people kind of hold these two views in their mind, like we mentioned, of I call it like the Superman side versus the guns and religion side of on the one hand, you have the truest, you know, greatest superhero in America, Superman, who just, you know, saves a plane because that's what he should be doing. And on the other side, you have this negative kind of middle America view of us. So we're just like these know-nothing bumpkins who always vote for Ronald Reagan or anybody who is hunted and fear anybody with a passport. So it's just an interesting dichotomy. And I became more and more fascinated as I went. And I found there was a lot more potential in the Midwest to run a company here than there was on either coast. And so that was kind of why I moved back, and I did in 2005. And then who was then my girlfriend at the time, moved from England to Iowa. And luckily, she did, I think, confuse Iowa with Illinois and so thought we were on Lake Michigan.
I've got to take a break. I want to come back and pursue that part of the conversation. I'm not even going to ask you how much it cost to get your car back in New York. I'm sure it was considerable, probably equivalent to the plane fare back to Des Moines.
Yep. Oh, yeah. More than a parking ticket in Des Moines.
That's for sure. That's Mike Draper, author of The Midwest, God's Gift to Planet Earth. He is joining us from snowy Des Moines. Also with me is Kenyon Gradert, a doctoral student in English at Washington University here in St. Louis. We're talking about the Midwest. Do we have an inferiority complex? Transplants, what do you think of this part of the country? What's the biggest surprise you found when you came here from someplace else? We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. You're listening to an encore presentation of St. Louis on the Air. We're talking about this area that some people call flyover country, but the rest of us, certainly within the sound of my voice, call home. Do you have a Midwest inferiority complex? We've talked about that. If you do, tell us why. If not, tell us why not. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. Send us a tweet at STL on Air or reach us through Facebook. My guests are Mike Draper, author of The Midwest, God's Gift to Planet Earth, a brand new book. Also here in studio is Kenyon Gradert, doctoral student in English at Washington University in St. Louis. Mike Draper is joining us from Des Moines, Iowa, where he lives and where he has a business. Tell me something, Mike, about your wife. You mentioned that she kind of maybe confused things with regard to Illinois and Iowa and that sort of thing. How has she adapted and acclimatized herself to this part of the world?
Yeah, I guess acclimatized to be, yeah, right. Be good,
particularly
considering
today.
It's pretty chilly here now.
Acclimated.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Midwest is a surprisingly easy place to, I think, move to. I don't know. I would personally feel that way because at least in Des Moines, everybody walks a little bit slower, so you're not as hurried. You know, people are generally friendlier to you. And I think when you don't have the, you know, kind of like brashness, like we mentioned with flyover country, where people always think everything else is so much more exciting. So whenever my wife says she's from London, you know, everybody kind of lights up and wants to know what London is like. And so you don't kind of have – they don't approach it with, oh, aren't you lucky to be in Des Moines? Everyone always kind of says like, oh, God, did you lose a lottery over there? Uh-huh. You know, how did you get here? And so I think it's at least a little bit easier because people are, you know, a little – they're not as like brash about where they're from.
You know, if we are misunderstood in this part of the country, and Kenyon, I'll start with you on this. If we are misunderstood, then why do some of the people that we have admired most and respect the most and accept their talent the most. I'll take two examples. One has already been mentioned is Johnny Carson, nationally known and beloved. Another is Garrison Keillor, who basically pins his whole thing on this part of the country. Why do you think these folks, their popularity extends so far beyond this part of the world?
Well, you know, I think there's something that a lot of people admire about a certain image of the Midwest, no matter where they are. And an example I can think of is John Stuart Curry, who was one of the three big regionalist painters back in the 30s. And they made the cover of Time magazine in the 30s. And during the Depression, he was painting these very pastoral images of Kansas, and the people who he lived with in his home, they thought he was stereotyping them and painting them as caricatures. They weren't happy about it, but people on the coasts really, really loved it and admired it because, you know, they were in the middle of their financial woes, and there was something comforting that they could cling to in these sort of images.
How about you, Mike? What do you think is the secret of the success of these Midwesterners I mentioned and others?
I think part of it is that, I mean, Garrison Keillor really, you know, plays up the Minnesota thing. You don't really hear as many Lutheran jokes on other shows. But a guy like Johnny Carson, you know, our diction is kind of what you consider the general American diction if you're from, you know, Iowa, Illinois, northern Missouri. And so you kind of sound like you're non-regional right off the bat. And so you don't sound like a southern comedian or a northeastern comedian. You sound just like, you know, Joe Everyman. And I think you tie that also into guys like Walter Cronkite and Tom Brokaw. There's the newscaster feel of this is just your everyday Joe. And a lot of, you know, Midwestern accomplishments, like I mentioned with the authors, have been kind of co-opted by America. So things like the car and the airplane and rock and roll, which are Midwestern accomplishments, become just symbols of the U.S., even things like Budweiser beer, Miller. Those are both Midwestern products, but they're thought of as American products in general.
Well, and actually, that's something that some scholars have commented on, too. We were talking about Faulkner, everybody knows he's this staple of Southern regionalism, and we don't seem to have that in the Midwest. And some people have commented on the fact that it's precisely because so many of these things that we've produced become American commodities rather than Midwestern commodities. So the Midwesterner is often more American than Midwest in regional identity.
You know, it's interesting that you should mention the fact that there's not a regional accent, if you will, here for most of this this part of the country. We do tend to, when we hear a Southern accent, some people tend to draw certain conclusions just on the basis of that accent, don't they? And they're not always very favorable.
Yeah, to say the least. Stephen Colbert somebody asked him, well, you're from South Carolina, you don't sound like it. He said, well, yeah, it didn't take me too long before I realized that if I had a Southern accent, people automatically thought I was dumber than I was. So I learned to lose it when I talked around other people. And I think, you know, the Midwest really, it gets back to the diversity of it, you know, has more accents than any other region. Somebody from northern Minnesota sounds nothing like somebody from Branson, Missouri. I mean, almost from, you know, different countries. Yet, when you think of the Midwest, you do think of this kind of like every man grew up on a farm. I got that all the time at Penn. Like, oh, are your parents farmers? No, they're not. Did you grow up on a farm? Why would I grow up on a farm? My parents aren't farmers. And then I'd say, no, my dad's an attorney and my mom's a mechanical engineer. And it's always like, in Iowa? You're like, yeah, well, we didn't have the legal system till my dad got there. And my mom was like required to set up indoor plumbing. So things have been really on the up and up since they moved to town. I'm a pretty big deal there.
Of course, here in Missouri, we can't even get the pronunciation of the state exactly right. It's either Missouri or Missouri.
So, yeah, Calvin Trillin wrote an entire thing about how you pronounce it, mm-hmm. whether it should be Missouri or Missouri.
Well, you should hear the politicians here, and maybe you have. It depends on where they are as to how they pronounce it. We have a full slate of callers who want to get into the conversation. Let's get them going. We'll begin with Stephanie, who called first. Stephanie, thanks for being with us. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Just wanted to let you know I am a transplant. I've been here 22 years now, and I cannot say enough good things about it. I also happen to be in real estate, so I understand the mentality of people relocating to the area. And their first thought is that, oh, my goodness, they don't need us here. They don't need us. They don't need us as friends. They have their college friends, high school friends, extended family. But I find that all of us that have been and stayed for at least 3 or 4 years find it a wonderful, wonderful place to raise our families. It's just so consistent. Everything is so consistent. Everything is so stable. So, and where do you go in the country where you can get into the zoo and take your family for no cost at all? So it's been a wonderful, my children have all been in the school systems, and I am a devotee.
All righty. Well, thank you so much. Were you surprised when you got here at what you found?
I had traveled here for a brief period of time. I'm actually from Florida, and when I came and spent a couple of days taking my children through all the parks and the zoos and the bush programs, I fell in love. So I couldn't get here fast enough to enjoy all the seasons, and then, of course, the people are wonderful.
All righty. Well, thank you so much for the call. Kenyon or Mike, you want to comment on Stephanie's remarks?
Well, I think one of the things is the simple fact that I think a lot of people end up coming back to the region is the practicality of costs. It's cheap to live here, and it's a great place to be for the money it involves.
I'm sure you agree.
Yeah, I think a lot of the thing, you know, that when you mentioned consistent, that's kind of how, you know, the one view of us is you know, through the 70s, people viewed the Midwest as almost like a museum of America. Like, oh, this is the way America used to be, and these are the good old days. Like, it's been Leave It to Beaver ever since then. And the funny thing about it is that, you know, I think the people are generally consistent. People are a little more economically pragmatic here. But there actually is a dynamic economy to it. This was the region where we first industrialized agriculture, which led to an excess of people moving into the cities, which led to pretty much the second industrial revolution in the 20th century with mass production with Henry Ford. And so it is funny that even in a consistent region, you do have these pretty huge risk takers. Like, we are capable of, you know, enormous change seemingly out of nowhere. You know, Iowa legalized gay marriage with the only unanimous Supreme Court ruling just a couple of years ago. And it makes headlines at first, you know, because it seems so out of the ordinary. But it's that's the kind of thing that happens here.
Well, and in regards to the economy, too, even more so, there's this with this sort of inferiority complex that we can sometimes have. Sometimes there's been this sense that our best economic days are behind us. You have these gargantuan figures like Henry Ford and the like, and they're all long gone. And in a lot of places, you feel like you're a total Rust Belt city and there's nothing left for you. But I mean, Mike mentions it in his book, too, how this sort of narrative of decline is, I think you said 78% made up. And I'd actually, I'd agree with that quite a bit, because there's so many good things happening in the region, too. Mike pointed to healthcare. Google and Twitter both originated here. There's Mike mentioned Paul Willis, who does some really interesting organic farming work in Iowa, and there's all kinds of exciting things happening in these places that may not have seen their brightest days 20, 30 years ago.
Plant sciences comes to mind. There's a lot of good work going on here, mm-hmm. not very far from where we're sitting right now. Let's go back to the phones and bring in Kristen calling from Imperial, Missouri. Kristen, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had an interesting experience when I finally left the Midwest. We went to Washington, D.C. for a field trip with my school, and I kept getting dirty looks and scowls from people, and I was wondering, like, what is going on? As it turns out, I'm overly polite, and my pleases and thank yous and holding the doors for old people were viewed as almost, like, foreign or strange to people, and I would never leave because I don't think politeness is a bad thing, and it was just really weird to be treated differently because I was polite.
Wait till you go to New York City. that'll open your eyes. Thank you, Kristen, for the call. How about it, you guys? Is this one of our problems? We're too polite?
Yeah, it's funny when if somebody's like in front of you in the grocery store, like you're trying to look at Pop-Tarts and they're also looking at Pop-Tarts, they'll turn around and when they notice you're there, say, "Oh, I'm sorry." Yeah. It's like, wow, it's amazing that that's something you are sorry about, is that you happen to be briefly in my way. And so, I mean, it is nice that, you know, it's one of the stereotypes that Midwesterners are nice, but they really are nice. When I moved back to Des Moines from Philadelphia, you still kind of had like grit on you. You had to kind of shove people around. You didn't want to be too nice. And I was taking trash out and there was like a homeless guy near the dumpster. And he goes, "Boy, it sure turned cold early, didn't it, this year?" I said, "Yeah, yeah, it did." And I was like, "What? Even the homeless people are polite here." It was unbelievable.
Do you want to add to that, Kenyon? I thought you were starting to say
yeah,
something.
Yeah, well, not... I mean, the question, is it a problem that we're too nice? And I'm biased, and my guttural reaction is absolutely not. What's wrong with being nice? But, you know, there's different cultural assumptions, too, and some people feel it's invasive of a personal bubble that's there for good reason. So, but no, I'm biased.
I like the pace. The East Coast, the pace is much too frenetic, and it's very much more European here, a little slower, a little more relaxed. That made a big difference to me. For whatever that's worth. Back to the phones. Let's bring in Lisa, who is calling from Chesterfield. Go ahead, Lisa.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just calling to say that I used to have a Midwestern inferiority complex, but I don't anymore. I grew up in mid-Missouri, a farming community, and moved to Chicago and then to Los Angeles. And after about 16 years, out of the Midwest, we moved back to the St. Louis area, and I do get that a lot. Like, why are you back? Why would you leave Los Angeles? Or why would you leave Chicago in the first place? And I just think everywhere you go, there is a provincialism. You know, I've seen it in Los Angeles. There are people who never leave a 2 or 3 square mile area and can't imagine what's outside of that bubble. I've also met delightfully polite people in New York and horribly, horribly rude people in the Midwest. So now I just figure I've tried both and I'm happy to be here. And I don't know. I don't think we're really missing much of anything, but it's good to go live somewhere for a period of time.
Well, thank you very much for that call. And, Mike, that's exactly what you did. That was a good thing, probably, for you to spend some time someplace else.
Yeah, I think I I kind of felt the same way. You know, I thought moving out east, it was going to be nothing but, you know, the, kind of the Catcher in the Rye merged with the Great Gatsby, like constant parties, nihilism, do whatever I want. And you find, you know, everywhere is where you make of it and who your friends are. And so there are people who are unhappy about living in New York. There's people who are unhappy about living in Des Moines. And there's people who are kind of happy no matter where they go. I think I'm more attuned to living in the Midwest, but I always kind of had a good time. And, you know, you do realize there are it's much trickier than people make it out to be of the stereotypes. You know, when I was in, people would say, oh, you're from Des Moines or Iowa, you must be racist. And I was like, well, I guess I've never thought about it, but you seem pretty convinced that I am. And we had just met 3 minutes ago. And one thing that would surprise them is they say, well, you know, at the time in the 90s, Des Moines had a black mayor. He was extremely popular. But I mean, Des Moines is a really white city. He didn't run on the black ticket. He just got elected because he was a nice guy and everybody liked him. Whereas in Philly, the politics were much more divisive. You had the black mayor and he ran for the black people. And the white people put up a white candidate. And that was, you know, you did have technically more ethnic diversity in that the percentages were different, but it didn't exactly lead to this harmonious everybody holding hands in Philadelphia talking about, isn't it great we live in such a diverse city? You know, there's pros and cons to everything.
What do you think about that, Kenyon, in terms of Midwestern racism? Are we more or less racist, do you think, than other parts?
Oh, in terms of racism specifically, I don't know. There's the stereotype that especially in the rural areas, that's where you're going to have racist people, but I haven't experienced that myself. With any kind of new influx of a new type of people, where I grew up, the Hispanic immigrant population was rising dramatically, and that's true of not just the Midwest, but most parts of America as well. And of course, you're going to get tensions and hard feelings there, but from what I saw in the small town I grew up in, actually, it's a cool story. Abraham was a Hispanic immigrant, and he came and took over the local butcher shop from Click Onima, one of the sort of paragons of our little town. And everybody was very welcoming. But yeah, you always have those tensions as well. It's a mix everywhere.
It's one of the raps against St. Louis, and we've done programs on this. People say that this community is not as welcoming as people might have expected it to be. Have you found that at all during your time here?
Well, I haven't lived in a ton of big cities, but from my initial impression, it does seem quite segregated. I mean, you go north of Del Mar and it changes in an instant in a very disconcerting way, and that's something I'm not used to as well. In rural communities, it almost fosters a certain egalitarianism because you have to shop at the same grocery stores, you have to go to the same high schools. There's just not enough people to foster different gated communities and things like that. And in, I don't know about other cities, but in St. Louis, I do see some solid class and racial division lines.
Yeah. I want to come back and pick up the conversation with Mike Draper as we continue our discussion of the Midwest. You just heard from Kenyon Grater, a doctoral student at Washington University here in St. Louis. Again, we have a number of calls. 382-8255 is our number. We'll get to those calls when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. You're listening to an encore presentation of St. Louis on the Air. My guests are Mike Draper, author of The Midwest, God's Gift to the Planet Earth. He joins us from Des Moines. Kenyon Grater is a doctoral student in English at Washington University here in St. Louis. Before I go back to you, Mike, I have three very quick comments here from Facebook. Randy writes, ironically, St. Louis is older than the United States and grew up to be a much bigger city, a lot earlier than any other city on the West Coast. Respect your elders, L.A. and San Francisco. Sean on Facebook says, in the immortal words of Will Rogers, someone tied this country or tilted this country in the middle and all the loose nuts rolled to either end. And KJ, you have to save that one for the sequel, Mike. And KJ writes,
yeah, really.
I appreciate the guest's comments about the scope of the Midwest. I was born and raised in Oklahoma, which has its own identity crisis. Is it the Midwest or the Southwest? Anytime I tell the story, nobody really has a very good answer to that. What do you think, Mike? What about Oklahoma? Oh. What is it? Where is it?
We lump it in with the South. Oklahoma is kind of tricky. We go over that in the book of, you know, part of Oklahoma is more Midwestern, the same way that, you know, Pittsburgh is kind of more Midwestern, but we just stuck with regular, you know, kind of state lines. So we cede Oklahoma to the South.
Let me ask the question that I asked of Kenyon a moment ago about the welcoming attitude in the Midwest that we're talking about. Do you see it as pretty consistently welcoming or not?
Yeah, having grown up in a small town, too, I actually agree, 100% that sometimes it's the littler communities that can be a little more welcoming. My graduating class was, 30, and we were in school K through 12. It was hard to have cliques. Your clique of two people isn't particularly intimidating. And so, but, Midwestern big cities are going to be the same as any big cities. St. Louis, Chicago, Detroit, these are all cities that have are extremely ethnically diverse. And when you look at things like, the projects, when you have something like Pruitt-Igoe in St. Louis, that was one of the, biggest experiments in project housing. And, the Midwestern cities, the kind of quote unquote collapse of Midwestern cities, which is just the shrinking of population, was kind of unprecedented in American history. The Midwest has been kind of at the forefront of everything from innovation, but also to kind of sliding down in terms of population. And that's why I think we'll kind of be at the forefront of moving back up.
Let's go back to the phones and bring in Chase calling from St. Louis. Chase, thank you for being so patient. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. So I've lived in the Midwest my whole life, originally from Des Moines, Iowa, and actually have my Des Moines is the greatest city ever t-shirt from Ray Gun. And
yeah.
Now I go to Wash U, and I'm getting my MBA here at Wash U. And the two things that I wanted to talk about were just that growing up I loved the show Mystery Science Theater 3000, and the creators of that show sort of created it with a Midwestern theme where they basically sit back, watch movies, and make fun of it. And they said that being from the Midwest was integral to their to the thematic scope of their show, because they really wanted to kind of capture that idea of we in the Midwest just sort of sit back and poke fun at Hollywood and the coast and kind of see the trials and tribulations from there as sort of ridiculous. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that I'm not sure if Michael feels this way or not, but how it's often the case that whenever I hear about Des Moines making it on a list, or St. Louis as being very recession-proof, or one of these places that is great for young people, that kind of thing, I always get nervous that it's maybe going to become a destination, become too popular, and lose some of that those aspects that we kind of grew up loving as a secret, and lose some of that mysteriousness. So, and I'll hear their comments off the air. Thank you.
Chase, thank you. Interesting point, Mike and Kenyon, about people being a little bit afraid that too many people will discover it.
Yeah, a lot of people with my book, they said, well, now that people know how great the Midwest is, won't, we lose our Midwesterner-ness of we start feeling that we're really great. And I don't think we'll ever be able to overcome, modesty. And I don't think we'll ever be able to kind of overcome the this is flyover country. I think these are kind of too embedded. It's funny to look at, with guys like Mystery Science Theater 3000, where they talked about how their Midwesterner-ness was kind of integral to the way they viewed things or the way they wrote. Kurt Vonnegut felt the same way of growing up in Indianapolis. And it's interesting. The most fascinating thing I read is that, stories over time, all the way back to Mark Twain, who was around before the West was even the West, he would kind of poke fun at Easterners and Eastern culture. And so this kind of mentality has been through, it's a steady thread. And so I think it's always unchanging. We will always get the short end of the opinion stick, but we'll always produce much more than the rest of the country.
Well, in regards to the fear that there might be too many people coming and we might get too popular, I don't think we need to view it as sort of this tourist destination goal that we have of bringing more people here. But I think something that me and Mike are both trying to do is simply foster a bit more pride in where you actually grew up, no matter where you're from, not necessarily needing to feel the urge to get out.
Before I go back to the phones, I have an email here from Debbie, who spent 30 years, she tells us, in four different states in the East Coast. She writes, I learned the appropriate label from the University of Illinois, commencement speaker for my brother's graduation in the 1980s. She referred to our native Midwestern warmth, which I instantly liked. I distinctly remember going back to my students at the University of Georgia and reporting to them, I knew we had something just as fine as Southern hospitality, its native Midwestern warmth. I continue to point out, whenever given the opportunity, the wonderful quality we all possess. That's a nice thought, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah, it sounds good to me. And I think it's truer than Southern hospitality. But
let's go back to the phones. We've got Meredith calling from Town and Country. Meredith, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm just sitting here cracking up because this topic reminds me of when I got to college the first week. I was born and raised in St. Louis, but I wanted to go very far away for school. So I went to the University of Arizona in Tucson. I remember the first week I was there, I was going to all these different sorority houses for Rush, and you have to put where you're from on your name tag. And people would see St. Louis, and instantly they would say, oh, your accent is so cute, and your accent sounds so this. And I never knew I had an accent until I got out of St. Louis. And I remember one girl asked me, oh, how's Mardi Gras? Don't you love Mardi Gras down there? Because I literally had no clue about anything in between the coasts, because so many kids from there are from California or from New York, and they literally got St. Louis mixed up with New Orleans. And this whole conversation, I was like a novelty for many, many weeks just from that name tag of where I was from. It was hilarious.
Meredith, here's a test. Say Highway 40 for me.
Highway 40.
There you go. No accent there. Thank you so much. And, of course, we do have a pretty good Mardi Gras celebration here in St. Louis that I think some people even say is second only to the one in New Orleans. So take that.
What her story reminds me of when I was at Penn, I dated a girl who was in, like, the main Jewish sorority. You know you're at, a really Jewish university when there's a main Jewish sorority. And so she invited me to the formal. And so it's five Jewish girls from New York and then four Jewish guys from New York and then me. And so they kind of talk about baseball for a while. And then one of the guys finally asks, so, Mike, where are you from? And before I can answer, my date kind of like puts her hands on the other girl's shoulders. And she said, you are not going to believe this. Mike is from Iowa. And it was like they had spent 21 years waiting to meet somebody from Iowa. You know, every question like, oh, my God, you're from Iowa. What's the weather like? What do your parents do? Where'd you shop when you were little? Did you drive cars? What kind of car do you drive? And it would be like if you met somebody from, you know, Poland and wanted to know, you know, everything about it. What's the climate like? What's your, you know, main goods and services? What did your parents do? And it really blew their minds when they found out I grew up almost exactly like they did. Because it would be like meeting somebody from Poland and finding out they speak English just like you. And they shopped at all the same stores and had the same car. And their parents actually had the same jobs. And so it really is this, you know, it's a cool novelty. That's what we found with the store, is that the Midwest has so much marketing potential in that. There's a lot of built-in mystery.
Yeah, and people speak so much about globalization these days and how much we share all across the world and these market commonalities that we have. But at the same time, there's this yearning for regional identity and for something to be unique about us. So that's why I think it's great with stores like Mike's or STL Style here in town, stuff like that.
Casey in St. Louis, I think, has a way to try to promote this area. Let's see if I'm right on that. Casey, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. No, actually, I wasn't promoting. It was a I'm from Missouri, and I went to college at Mizzou. And after I finished, we started a Midwestern Music and Arts Festival celebrating Midwestern culture. So it was called the Bluebird Music and Arts Festival. And we did it from 08 and 09. But unfortunately, that was when the economy kind of turned south, and we just couldn't get enough sponsorship to keep it going.
But that's a pretty good way to promote the area, though, obviously, with the music and art festivals. And we do that pretty well.
Yeah, and, you know, people just don't realize how much great music and art comes out of the Midwest. And we had every genre from hip-hop to folk to country to, you know, blues, you know, everything. And it was just a really impressive lineup. And when people found out it was all Midwestern artists, they were blown away.
Well, you make that point in your book, Mike, as well, the influence of the music from this part of the country and musicians.
Yeah, and we say that the Midwest invented, you know, rock and roll, and it really did. I mean, it was a mix of, you know, kind of Southern blues, but it also mixed with, you know, like ragtime, which was Midwestern. And so you have, you know, areas like St. Louis, which produced Chuck Berry and then Miles Davis. And these are real, you know, hotbeds of Chess Records out of Chicago and then Motown out of Detroit. You have the phrase rock and roll was coined in Cleveland, and a lot of the earliest rock and roll was to describe Sister Rosetta Tharpe, who was out of Chicago. And, you know, that's the biggest thing that always irks me is when people, you know, view us as, you know, kind of uncultured, these uncultured masses of middle America, when really some of you know, America's best culture, some of the best music, some of the best writing has all come out of, you know, the Midwest. So growing up here isn't a detriment. I think it's, you know, one of the biggest positives, one of the biggest things I've got going for me, except my good looks, which I also attribute to the Midwest. we're so handsome.
Send us a picture and let us be the judge of that, Mike. Ken, you have written in one of your blogs that some believe, I've got a note here, some believe the phrase Midwest culture is the height of the oxymoron.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, every once in a while I've sort of pitched people the idea that I want to teach a course on Midwest culture. And every once in a while you get that kind of hesitation about, what are you going to teach?
quick course, maybe one class.
Yeah, a week-long crash course.
Well, we do have an inferiority complex if people are talking that way. Let's go back to the phones, and Michael is joining us from Hazelwood. He's been waiting a long time. Go ahead, Michael.
Hi, Don. Morning.
Hi.
I spent about 25 years in the D.C. area of Northern Virginia. I lived my first 30 years here in St. Louis. I lived in D.C. for the second half of my life, and I've moved back to St. Louis. And honestly, I don't find a big difference in the people, at least on a one-to-one basis, in terms of being polite and friendly. I lived for about a year in Sioux Falls, and that place, the people were cold just like the weather. But in Virginia, Maryland, and D.C., people hold back to let you merge into traffic, and they're you know, friendly and let you go ahead of them in the grocery stores, things like that. What I found, the biggest culture shock I found when I moved back to St. Louis is I-270, which just absolutely scares me to death. I drove the Capitol Beltway for 20 years, and I was not near as afraid of that as I am of driving on 270.
Well, that's an interesting observation. Kenyon, does it scare you?
Well, you know, it seems like every morning on the radio, there's an accident on every single major interstate we have here. So, I don't know. And they call snow days very quickly here because it's just bizarre what they'll call snow day for compared to here. But, yeah, the roads are a bit scary.
I have an observation about what he found in D.C. and Northern Virginia, and that is that many, many, many of the people who live in that part of the country are from someplace else, and many of them from the Midwest because they go there to work for the government.
Uh-huh.
You know that. Hello.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
That's exactly true, Don. My neighbors were from Pennsylvania, from West Virginia, from Richmond. You know, the area is sort of a melting pot, but especially compared to some of the more abrasive people from New York and New Jersey, that sort of thing. I mean, they really do live up to their stereotype. But I didn't find that in the D.C. area.
From being from New Jersey, I'm going to have to say to you, see you later, buddy. thanks very much for the call. Time is getting away.
I'm in the parking lot.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm going to bring in Lee from University City very, very quickly. I'm intrigued by what Lee wants to talk about, but it has to be quick, Lee. Go ahead.
Hi, sure thing. I'd like to ask what your thoughts are on the age that people typically get married here in St. Louis and in the Midwest. So I fully agree that, you know, the experience of a city has to do with your connections and the people you meet and the community around you. And so I'm in my late 20s. I have a lot of friends in my early 30s, 35, single people. And one of the complaints I get is that it's hard to find communities of single people at that age. These are people who have oftentimes have come here for the job or come here for...
Lee, I've got to stop you there because of time so we can get a response very, very quickly. Mike, it has to be very quick, 10, 15 seconds to respond.
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of found the marriage thing is true, and I've heard that from a lot of people. I mean, I'm just turned 30. I've been married now for 5 years, and none of my friends from Penn who are from out east are even engaged, so...
Yeah, I got married young as well. I got married when I was 24, so yeah, it's probably true.
Well, congratulations to both of you. I hope it lasts forever. I want to thank you so much. Kenyon Grader, thanks for being with us from Washington University. Mike Draper, author of The Midwest, God's Gift to the Planet Earth. I understand your book is for sale at STL Style, and I'm sure folks can find it on the Internet as well. Is that correct, Mike?
Yep. Yeah, you can find it online. But if you're in St. Louis and want to shop locally, it's at STL Style.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Good luck with the book. It's a great read. It's a lot of fun for
Thanks
people
so
in this part of the country.
Thank you.
And thank you all for calling, folks. I wish we could have gotten more calls, but time just doesn't allow it. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape, and he'll talk with St. Louis native Nathan Sutton about his film, The Autumn Wanderer. And in the next installment of Soundbites produced with Sauce Magazine, he'll take a look at the best in St. Louis food and drink in 2013. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with production assistance from Camille Phillips, Aaron Dorr, Jeremy Bailey, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening to this encore presentation. I'm Don Marsh.